Members, we will call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. We are not going to approve the minutes of the last meeting because we do not yet officially have a quorum. So Mr. Rakowski and Representative O'Neill, we're going to have you talk slowly. With that, if I will go ahead and move House File 2995 so that it is before the committee, we will not be acting on it until we have a quorum, which should probably happen while you're describing the bill. With that, I will move House File 2995 and move to re-refer it to the Committee on Jobs. With that, Representative O'Neill, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So I have a Dolly housekeeping bill today, and we're making some changes here that are a little bit easier for business and easier for the department to administrate, and I'm going to have Don Rakowski go into detail as to what we're changing today.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Thank you for carrying the bill.
Mr. Rakowski, welcome to the committee. Nice to have you back.
It's always a pleasure to be in the House Commerce Committee. It's always a pleasure to be in the House Commerce Committee. Thank you, Representative Davids. And I really do mean that. If you want to indulge you. I'll go through it in about 3 to 5 minutes.
Mr. Rakowski, you don't have to stall anymore. We now officially have a quorum, and we are legal.
Thank you, Bill.
This is what I would call a semi-annual or biannual housekeeping bill because the reason the bill has so many pages is there's been kind of a pent-up need to do housekeeping and clarification changes because Representative O'Neill had our bill last year and the year before. The bill is actually a holdover from the 2014 session for reasons I don't need to get into here. So we saw dates come and go during those 2 years, and that's one of the things we're dealing with is getting rid of obsolete dates, 2013, 2014, 2015, that type of thing. Real quickly, these changes, we're a regulatory agency, as you know, so we affect a lot of folks' lives, their occupations. So it's important that our statutes are as consistent and clear as possible to the people who have to follow and adhere to them. On a minor correction, sections 1 and 2 is why it's going to the Jobs Committee. This has to do with fee employment agencies. This was an issue we dealt with the housekeeping bill last year. So it's a little bit of cleanup for fee employment agencies. We're not requiring them to be licensed anymore. Fee employment agencies are something that were in vogue back when I was coming out of college, and as many of you know, that was a very long time ago. If I was coming out of college today, the employer would pay they would pay a temp agency or some other employment organization rather than have the employee or the job seeker pay the fee. Moving on to sections 4 through sections 25, the meat of the bill deals with our construction code and licensing statute, the so-called 326B statute, which covers plumbing, electrical, residential building contractors, building officials. I mean, the list goes on and on. You've heard from constituents on and off over the years. Couple of highlights. In the bill last year, actually this was a bill put forward by the Builders Association regarding section 4. We stretched out the implementation date of the state building code from 180 days to 270 days. We are now adding the Board of Electricity, High Pressure Piping Board, and the Plumbing Board to also have that same flexibility as the department. Section 5 is a term of art with our continuing education for billing officials and other professionals in the industry. We are converting the current term continuing education units to hours. It does not change the amount of continuing ed required by billing officials. Section 6 deals with some obsolete rules regarding elevator constructors. Some of you might remember they got their own license as opposed to having an electrical license some years ago, 3-4 years ago. Let's see. sections 13 through 24, which is why the bill has so many pages. We are, again, it's a term of art. Many of you know Mr. Representative Mahoney is a master high-pressure pipe fitter, master's the term of art. In some of our statutes, we talk about contracting high-pressure pipe fitters, so we're making that consistent throughout the statute. And last but not least, my favorite statute in Minnesota state statutes, a combative sports statute, which yours truly gets to manage as well as understand the statute. We're making some clarification changes, both for the people that we license and for the promoters, regarding when they have to settle up with us after a promotion, or excuse me, after a contest.
Thank you, Mr. Rutkowski. I believe Representative Davids has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Rutkowski, you had mentioned that there was no increase in continuing education, but I see in Section 5, it increased in continuing education hours for certified building officials and certified, and then it goes down and increases continuing education hours for accessibility specialists, so it sounds like we are increasing continuing education.
Mr. Rutkowski.
I asked the same question, Representative Davids, Mr. Chairman, of our folks who administer this, and they said there is no change. So that's what I've been told. It's a change of the, we're making the term hours consistent throughout the statute. It looks, you're right, when I first looked at the bill, it looked like an increase in the required hours, but it's not.
Mr. Chairman, that wouldn't be acceptable.
Davids. Well, Mr. Rutkowski, can you go back and check that? If this passes today, it's going to jobs, so we'll have an opportunity to address that. Representative Davids, is that okay with you?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Representative Davids.
We'll talk.
Thank you. Members, any other questions? Representative Sundin.
Under Section 11, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under Section 11, bonding and insurance there. Just started reading it here. Are some people exempted from being licensed if they have proper bonding and insurance?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman and sure. Representative Sundin, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Labor and Industry required that pipe layers get a bond from both agencies. Last year, MPCA said that they could just get one bond for both agencies, and they still, it doesn't address, they still have to be licensed.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Other questions, members? Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? Not seeing anyone coming down. Representative O'Neill, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you, Chair and members, and we will look into that Section 5 for Chair Davids, and we'll have that answer when we get to jobs, and otherwise I just appreciate moving along, and we'll take care of the rest of it in jobs.
With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2995 be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative O'Neill and Mr. Rutkowski and Ms. Representative Davids. Representative Davids, have you had a chance to review the minutes from our last meeting?
I have. I'd like to move those minutes.
Representative Davids moves the minutes. Has anybody got any questions, comments, concerns, anything about Representative Davids' minutes? Seeing none, those in favor of the Davids motion to adopt or to approve those minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Davids and members. Folks, before we get to the next bill, I will just say you have your South Padre Island. You've got various destinations in Florida. But I think the House Commerce Committee is a really good spring break destination. And I have some evidence of that. We have Representative Scott, Kresha Anderson, all have spring break visitors here. Ms. Rowan has a spring break visitor here. Anybody else that we're missing? Welcome. There's going to be a luau later. Stick around for that. And spread the word. Next year, we think there will be a bigger crowd for spring break. So with that, Representative Rarick, Representative O'Driscoll will move. I assume you'll move House File 2992, Representative O'Driscoll.
I guess I'll move House File 2992.
And that is being re-referred. Should it pass, that is also being re-referred to the Committee on Jobs. Representative Rarick, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2992 is a Department of Labor and Industry bill. It is dealing with the AWARE program, that is a safety program administered under Minnesota OSHA. It is striking some language that is outdated. You'll notice that when the bill was initially written, it was language brought in to make to bring people into compliance by the year 1993, so that language is no longer needed, so that is being struck. And then we're changing a provision. Instead of updating the list every 2 years, the list will be updated every five. That will be better for the department and better for contractors. So with that, I'll hand it over to Mr. Rakowski.
Mr. Rakowski, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back. It's happy spring break.
Mr. Rakowski, do you feel a little bit better about testifying here now that you know that you're at a spring break destination?
Yeah, I do. I'm all warm inside. This bill came forward, as many of you know, been around for a few years. Every fall, we're asked to come up with some policy bills to make government work better. And the Minnesota OSHA program, for those who don't know, it's a state plan. About half the states in the United States have state plans. The rest of the states simply adhere to federal OSHA, which just kind of a factoid to have. Because we run our own OSHA program, the AWARE program is unique to Minnesota, and it was started, like the representative Eric said, about 25 years ago. It's simply a safety program that your insurance carrier can work with. Our OSHA consultation people come out free of charge and help you set up a safety plan. Those of you who are in the contracting business and building industries know that safety is a high priority, and they are always on what's called the AWARE list every 2 years. But there are some companies or industries, excuse me, that are identified by the NAICS code. They're what I would call on the bubble. They might be on for 2 years, they might go off for 2 years. And it's all based on the Bureau of Labor Statistics injury records. So if there's a bump in injury rates, they get on the, you're required to have a safety plan. Every 2 years just to seem to be not enough time for a company to know that they're on the plan or not. And then if our OSHA folks came out to do a general duty inspection, they might say, you don't have a safety plan, you're supposed to have a safety plan. And it was back and forth. Well, if you get one, then we'll reduce the violation. It just wasn't a priority with us. So by going to 5 years, there'll be more stability, more awareness for businesses who may or may not be on the list. And 5 years is obviously a much longer time. As House members, I'm sure you know all about every 2 years. I just thought of that right now.
You're good thinking on the fly. Time.
It is.
Thank you, Mr. Rakowski. Members, any questions? Anybody in the audience want to speak for or against this particular bill? Not seeing anyone coming down. We will, Representative O'Driscoll, if you'd like to renew your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew the motion that House File 2992 be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs.
Those in favor of the O'Driscoll motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Congratulations, Representative Rarick. Thank you, Mr. Rakowski.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
pleasure
Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Davids, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Well, that sounds like a name I know, a name I trust. Tough crowd today. Representative Davids will move House File 3285 and move that that be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Davids, as I look at this bill, it appears that there is a delete all amendment. I assume that is an author's amendment.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Any quick comments or questions on this before we vote to get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be in?
I'd appreciate your support.
Seeing none, those in favor of the adoption of the DE2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Thank you, members. Representative Davids, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a very narrowly tailored bill. It's designed to help companies that have insurance policies in the health insurance marketplace to complete the process. Basically, what we're looking at, if a company is trying to exit the market, there are times when they're basically not able to because they're not able to non-renew certain contracts. And if you look back at some of those old contracts, they're really not very good. Some of them have like a $100 day hospital limit, $200 for intensive care. That's basically for the first 5 minutes. And so these folks have these policies that for some reason they're hanging on to. The price is high, the coverage is low. and these companies need to be able to exit the market. The amendment language was basically we've been working with the Department of Commerce on that, and I'm not aware of any opposition to this. I have Ms. Robin Rowan. I would like to testify to the bill if you would allow that, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly, Ms. Representative Davids. Ms. Rowan, if you want to say anything, we'd love to hear words of encouragement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robin Rowan. I'm here on behalf of Principal Financial Group, which is a financial services company headquartered in Des Moines, but they have about 200 employees and agents here in Minnesota, and also $1.4 billion in life insurance in force. But they also used to be in the group health insurance market, which is why I'm talking to you today. They are one of just a small number of insurers that left the healthcare market before the passage of the ACA. And they still have conversion policies on the books, and these policies are guaranteed non-renewable. The policies date back to the 70s, and they have benefit sets that Representative Davids alluded to that are significantly inferior to what they can buy on the market today. The premiums are higher, and these are also very expensive to administer for insurance companies that are no longer in the health insurance market. So to give you an idea of how obsolete these policies are, they cap the surgical benefit for each procedure at $1,200. So if you get your cataracts removed and it's $3,000, it pays $1,200. You have a coronary bypass, which is $60,000, this pays $1,200. When Principal left the market in 2010, they had 48 Minnesota conversion policies on the books. They've reached out to their policyholders no less than 12 times to help move them into more modern coverage. They now have only two policyholders left that won't respond. They didn't even respond to offers of financial assistance. Go talk to a CPA, talk to a financial advisor, talk to a lawyer. You can get much better, less expensive coverage on the market now, and they haven't responded. And Minnesota is the only state that we're aware of that doesn't have a process for completing, for being able to complete a market exit for a company that's no longer selling health insurance. We've been working with the Department of Commerce on this for a year, keeping them informed of the fate of the policyholders, and we've worked with them on the language to make sure it's very narrow. So it's only companies that are out of the market that have five or fewer conversion policies left. And we've also made sure that there's sufficient time, notice, and resources for the insureds to find better coverage, and we'd appreciate your support.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Questions? Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Thank you, Representative Davids. To sum it up, we've got policies, a handful, maybe scores of policies that are still being sold because they have to be, because they can't be non-renewed, that have higher premiums, lower benefits.
Correct.
And I say that because when you look at this, you may come to the early conclusion that this is to get rid of some policies that have higher benefits and lower premiums. Are there policies that are out there that have higher benefits and lower premiums that you're trying to get rid of, or are they all into that category that you've described that have high premiums and low benefits?
Ms. Rowan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, this was something the Commerce Department was vigilant about, to make sure that the language was so narrowly tailored that it was only these type of conversion policies with very outdated benefit sets that would be able to take to be able to use this language to exit the market.
And Mr. Chairman, to the Atkins question, that's a very good question, because we don't want to be doing the opposite of that. I just look at this surgeon's fee. You can buy 80 units, maximum $6 per unit, $480 of coverage. When 5 years ago, when I had my quadruple bypass surgery, took a Husqvarna chainsaw to me, and it really hurt, I'll guarantee you, that didn't even wash the chainsaw, $480. So there's some people out there that think they have coverage and they really don't. And that's, for example, anesthesia is 15% of the surgical amount. In this example, the top is $480. So for the anesthesiologist, they would pay $72.
Probably wouldn't even knock you out.
That would really hurt.
Just a
shot of whiskey. Yes, and so that's what we're looking at here. We're not trying to have a company get off a good policy with a cheap price. I don't know if the department wanted to testify on behalf of this or anybody that has concerns.
Representative Atkins, did that cover your question? Do you have another one?
I was simply wanted to make the point. By the way, there's a hammer to knock you out, I suppose, if we're going to use the chainsaw for the rest. But the yeah, we got the. It's kind of a small gavel you got there, Mr. Chair.
Well, you know.
My point in raising the question is that this is one of those bills that folks can use as a gotcha. It looks on its face, it looks like one that would be, you know, we'd find it in campaign flyers. I would say publicly as we sit here today, I hope that folks won't do that. I intend to vote for the bill. I appreciate that the department is here, and if there was the chance that this was going to take people's good coverage away, that they're getting at a reasonable premium and replace it with high premium, low benefit coverage, I'm sure they would be up here kicking and screaming. And I just say that because this is the kind of thing that sometimes does show up in those campaign flyers. I hope it doesn't, and I intend to vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Well said. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the testifier, regardless of how many policies a company has active, the regulatory responsibilities, i.e. the regulatory costs, are the same, and that's what kind of creates this problem is when you end up with a really small number, you have those fixed costs to be in compliance. Would that be correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lunan, yes, that's correct. With a very small number of policies for the company to manage and a company that's no longer in the health insurance market at all, it's very expensive to administer those policies.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. Thank you, Ms. Rowan. We have one other testifier listed here, Mr. James Groats from Raymond James, if you want to come down. And if there's anybody else that wants to testify for or against the bill after Mr. Groats testifies, please come on down. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Yes,
and
my
start
name
whenever
is
you're ready.
James Groats, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I have been in the securities business for more than 40 years. I've been in the insurance business for almost 40 years. I am concerned about this in reading the language because of experiences I have had both personally and with clients. I feel the language has to be very, if you're going to do this, there has to be some language in there to address the economic benefit to really carefully do this. Because I've seen time and again where people get conversion policies and they have very favorable drug benefits in them. In other words, their drug coverage could not be had today elsewhere. And this has to do with something called tiering. And in other words, the tiering is beneficial to them. They may have been a conversion off of some corporate plan. And we're talking about the very expensive drugs today that might cost you $6,000 or $7,000 a month. And my concern is that somehow might be used to do that. And the language here really needs to be very carefully crafted. I am in favor of, you know, tapping those on the shoulder saying, hey, look it, you just don't understand. You could be doing better elsewhere. You've got an outdated policy. But I am concerned about this business of five or fewer. I mean, the way that I look at it, if this is what looks good on the first glance may not look good when you dig into it. One of the concerns I have with five or fewer, if this were such a good idea, why don't we extend it to all insurance policies? Well, that would have very serious unintended consequences if suddenly somebody's crop insurance were canceled. Because they were one of five or fewer. And again, I didn't see anything or discussion on tiering. The other thing I didn't see discussion on or hear discussion on was experience. There could be cases where the health plans really want to get out of these non-cancelable policies. And what kind of experience are they having in terms of claims and everything else? And the idea is we haven't looked at the experience prior to cancellation and the experience that they might incur following cancellation. I didn't see anything on that. My wife and I are very sensitive to these conversion plans because of the tremendous financial hardship and bad experience we went through. I'm holding for you a copy of the front of one of our certificates from our healthcare cooperative that my wife and I put up the money to save from bankruptcy, only to have our group benefits taken away by conversion policies. We were told, following the name change, that this company didn't exist anymore. And all they did was move our premiums higher and higher. We were switched from policy to policy without our prior permission and acknowledgement, from conversion to conversion, and at every step of the way, our premiums went up. So we are very sensitive about this because of what has happened. It happened to us just again in December, where we were switched without our permission and consent, and my wife's premium went up almost 50%. So we are very sensitive to this. The big problem we have in this state is enforcement. We just simply can't get the regulatory agencies to enforce. And having been in the business I've been in for 40-plus years, Wall Street would never tolerate this. So again, I would ask state to you that I could be in favor of this bill, provided the language was carefully crafted to protect those that might be twisted out of what is now very favorable tiering for prescription drugs. And again, there has been no statements made about experience. I think it's a good idea when people can, for example, be moved into something that's to their economic advantage, but we have to be very careful, as Mr. Adkins said, that, you know, this could be to their economic disadvantage. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Mr. Rhodes, thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions for Mr. Rhodes? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just exactly how many people are we talking about being affected by this potentially?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sundin, five or less. And we did have the department go over it. So that's why I put the amendment on, because the department wanted the amendment on here. So, and it has nothing to do with crop insurance. And I think that the department should be going after companies that actually still have these policies out there, because, like I said, people think they have insurance and they really don't.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned at one point, one of the testifiers, or maybe it was you, the author, that some people have not communicated back when they were queried about their preferences as far as policies. Have you checked the cemeteries?
Representative Davids?
Well, I'm not. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sundin, I'm not aware of too many cemeteries that send checks in to pay their premium. But well, maybe they do. In Chicago, they do. Well, I don't think they do that here. We can talk about that.
Representative Adkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, in response, thank you, by the way, for being here and for sharing those thoughts. I think in light of that, it would do me some good to get an assurance from the Department of Commerce about what their reading is and why they've supported the amendment or wanted the amendment, if we might. I think there's somebody here from the
Mr. Rhodes, thank you for your testimony. I was going to say something similar to what Representative Atkins said. And here's Mr. Brickwitty, if he wants to come down and enlighten us a little bit on this.
Mr. Chairman, Peter Brickwitty from the Department of Commerce, Representative Atkins. The department has no position on this bill formally, fiercely neutral. However, we have been in discussions with one particular company, I think it's the one that's been discussed here, about the nature of their business no longer being health insurance and being in a position to have communicated over many years with a very small, distinct population of individuals who have had these types of conversion policies and have had varying levels of success in speaking to them and connecting to them about now what types of policies are available to them that previously were not. I would say the amendment certainly improves the bill and makes it clear that not only does any company in this position have to be in a very, very limited posture with five or fewer covered individuals, but also providing notice to the department that this is going to happen. And the time frame in the bill also allows one additional attempt on that company's allows that company one additional attempt to interact with these individuals, these remaining individuals, and have them choose to move during the regular open enrollment process of their own accord before the policy would be canceled.
Thank you, Mr. Brickwitty. Representative Atkins?
Just to that point, would it be fair? I get that you're neutral on the bill, and that's a typical approach that the department takes. Would it be fair to assume, though, that you would be here opposing strongly if it was what I described earlier, which is seeking to replace low premium, high coverage with high premium, low coverage? I suspect, because we've seen that pattern before, the department comes in here and is pounding the table, if that's the effort.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, I believe that's a fair assumption.
Thank you.
Representative Davis,
Mr. Chairman, I think we would characterize the department's position as being enthusiastically neutral.
Thank you, Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman, nothing in this bill increases continuing education requirements in any way. So.
You're learning. That's good. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the Commerce Department.
This is my re-election bill, by the way.
The former testifier had made the comment, which I thought was a valid one because I'd heard in other situations about concerns about enforcement. I want to make sure you heard that. And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lunan, I did.
Yeah, I wonder if you'd care to respond to that,
Mr. Brickley.
That concern.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lunan, not knowing the specific circumstances of this particular case, I wouldn't deign to comment on the particulars. But I think, going back to Representative Atkins' comment too, I think we would take a very dim view of any attempt to, on the part of a company, to try to move an individual from one policy to another policy that has a lesser benefit set or increases their costs, and would certainly, just like any other complaint that we would receive, look into that. So again, I don't know the specific circumstances of Mr. Gross's testimony, but would be happy to look into it.
Yeah, Representative Lunan.
Yeah, my point with that is that even if we do the right thing here, which I think this is the right thing to do, that all of a sudden somebody does something nefarious, there are people out there that are concerned at the rigor of the enforcement in certain situations. This may be one, this may not be one. And that that does seem to be a theme. Well, I've heard it several times right now that's kind of problematic.
Mr. Brickwitty, Representative Davids.
Well, I can talk to you about quite a few folks that would argue that the Commerce Department's enforcement is very strong. Too strong.
Is there any other member questions on this, or is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill?
With that, I think Mr. Groats did a nice job of testifying, and I think both Representative Atkins, Representative Davids, myself, all of the members of this committee, certainly Mr. Brickwitty and the Commerce Department, would never be considering this bill or anything like this if we thought that there was any chance that this was going to disadvantage any policyholder, any consumer. And I think, well, I will say I appreciate the department working with Ms. Rowan and her people to come up with this amendment that, I don't want to say belt and suspenders, but I think it did more to address those needs, and I think it is well received. Do you want to come down and testify? Come on down. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, please. Chairman Hoppe. My name is Sheila Van Pelt, members of the committee. I just want to touch base on an issue just regarding possibly conversion, but the ideas of seeking information from your HMOs. And I am now on my 115th request of information on contracts, plan, group number, ID number. I've sought the help of the through consumer complaints with the Department of Commerce, the Attorney General's Office, and the Minnesota Department of Health. And I've been told that the Minnesota Department of Health was the group to go, and I could get my information sought that I'm seeking through there. And they have been of no help. The only thing I got was evidence of coverage booklets, and I did get no contract-specific things, and there are concerns when this particular person I have legal authority to get has been changed and changed and changed, and all I get is very vague, superficial comments. nothing more, and I do believe when I look at my state government to help me out when it comes to these changes and getting specific contract information, no one's helping, and no one cares.
Representative Davids.
Mr. Chairman, Greg Davids cares. And I would be more than happy to visit with you after we're done here. We'll go make a phone call and get your information.
I will tell you this much. The HMO that I am dealing with will not speak with me. I am working with their attorney. So it has all been turned over to outside legal because, and it's a medical malpractice defense law firm who won't do anything. And the Minnesota Department of Health, through that help, won't do anything either. I mean, I don't know how many times I have to ask where I'm getting nowhere, and I would welcome help because it's not just me, it's how many other people who want to get information about their contracts and they don't get it. Well,
Ms. Van Pelt?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to help on that, but I think one that could help probably better be Mr. Peter Brickwitty. Get him involved. He's really good at that stuff.
Well, Representative Davids, I appreciate your endorsement of him, and we'll...
Where is he?
We'll
get him.
Well, we'll take care of this after this bill. Ms. Van Pelt, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And we'll have Representative Davids cares, and we'll have the two of you talk and potentially get Mr. Brickwitty involved. With that, Representative Davids wants to renew his motion that House File 3285, as amended, be recommended, be re-referred to the General Register. Those in favor of this motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Davids and members. Up next is Representative Sanders, House File 2540. Representative Sanders, I assume you'd like to move your bill, House File 2540, so it is before the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move, and I believe the path is public safety.
I think that is correct. So the motion is that the bill be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. I have an A2 amendment. Representative Sanders, is that your amendment? Or do you want it, if it's... Do you
yes,
want to
Mr.
speak to
Chair.
The bill first, or do you want to take up the amendment?
Why don't I briefly speak to the bill, and then we'll take up the amendment.
Sounds good to me. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, House File 2540 is a bill that simply basically codifies or continues to legalize fantasy sports in Minnesota. Whether that be daily fantasy sports or seasonal-long fantasy sports. There's been a lot of activity around the country, a lot of confusion, I think, all around the country as to what exactly is fantasy sports. For those that play, it's very clear, it's evident, it's a passion, it's a lot of fun. For those that don't, I think there's a lot of confusion. And we've seen a lot of states take a lot of different actions and take a lot of different steps. For the most part, most states are taking a step towards legalizing or continuing to allow fantasy sports to operate in their states, oftentimes with some additional consumer protections in line. Some states have are going a different route and kind of putting a halt on fantasy sports or paid contests in their state. I think that this is a very balanced approach, a very important approach. We have almost 1 million Minnesotans that play fantasy sports on a regular basis, and over 55 million Americans that play fantasy sports. And while it's fun, I think it's a significant cultural opportunity that continues to grow professional sports as well. The interest in the NFL and Major League Baseball and sports in general have continued to grow, and I think a large part of that is due to the fantasy culture that has sprung up over the last 30 years. I'll also say that I think over the last 30 years, fantasy sports has done very well. It's thrived, it survived, a lot of folks play. If you don't in this room, I guarantee you, a very close friend or family member does. And really, government's never been involved in this, and it's survived, and it's grown exponentially. And so I really don't see a need for us to go any other route than to ensure that Minnesotans that are playing fantasy sports today see no difference when Major League Baseball season starts or the NFL season starts in September with their fantasy sports that they'll be playing. So with that, I will maybe perhaps introduce my testifier on behalf of the bill and let him say his comments.
Sure. Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the committee. He'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Paul Charchian. I'm the president of the Fantasy Sports Trade Association. I am a Plymouth, Minnesota resident. The Fantasy Sports Trade Association is a 320-member advocacy group for really everybody that's got a meaningful footprint in the fantasy sports space. You might be surprised to think that there even would be a Fantasy Sports Trade Association, but our association includes everybody from the NFL and ESPN and NBC and Fox, Disney, all the way down to little guys with a dream who just love fantasy sports and have got a great idea for some next innovation in fantasy sports. Minnesota has become the hotbed of fantasy sports, and you probably don't know that. You just know that everybody you know plays, you know all these people who play. But it turns out that we are nationally recognized as the highest per capita fantasy sports marketplace in America. There are 12 companies, fantasy sports companies, in the FSTA just from the Twin Cities alone. The FSTA, the Fantasy Sports Trade Association, exists to support not just the companies, but also all of the players, the nearly million players that we have here who want to continue playing the games that they love. My company, League, is called LeagueSafe.com. We're not directly involved in daily fantasy sports and contests like these, but these contests have really trickled down to have a huge impact on our entire industry. About one-third of the FSTA's members directly have contest companies. Another third are companies that deal with lateral products to the fantasy sports space, like advice, for example, on how you can best approach your contests. And even for my company, that has really nothing to do with it. We have a deal where we send customers over to fantasy contests for like a bounty. And so it's really been something that has really helped grow our entire industry. A lot of people love to play. And I mentioned that the FSTA's got a lot of members, but I also like to mention that these contests have been looked at by Major League Baseball, the NBA, Major League Soccer, the NHL. They've all looked closely at these contests, and they've invested in them and partnered with them. A couple of owners from the NFL are owners in these platforms. And so they've all examined the legality, and they've all felt very comfortable with it. We do as well. On behalf of the 325 member companies, the FSTA, and the nearly million players in Minnesota, I urge the committee to keep fantasy sports legal in the future like it is now.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Representative Sanders, we do have the A2 amendment. Is this the time you'd like to take there, or should we go to member questions first?
Sure, Mr. Chair. And speaking a lot with I guess you could say the organizations and several of the large daily fantasy sports companies, and in conjunction with them speaking with Representative Atkins as well. I did want to, you know, I'm more open to codifying some of the consumer protections that are listed in the A2. And I think some of these are important, I think, to the consumers. And I also think that it's okay to do this because many of these companies already are doing these things. And so to put them in statute will not change the face or the experience of a fantasy player. So I think that these are decent consumer protections. I think they're good, and I think they're fine to adopt, Mr. Chair. So I'd move the A2.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Sanders, for moving the A2. I like the A2. I did have, if it's all right, I've got, and I know it's an author's amendment. We routinely take author's amendments, and if, Mr. Chairman, if that's what you want to do. I had a couple questions for the industry folks. And, Mr. Charchian, I appreciate your testimony. I recognize that you're part of the organization of players. But my understanding is that you're not actually, your company doesn't do this, doesn't do DFS. Is that,
that
right?
That is correct. My company is not a contest company. The company I own and run from Plymouth.
And so my question, Mr. Chairman, thank you, is I guess for folks who are in this industry, if they're here as well, and I think there's some representatives.
We do have one.
Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could state your name for the record, please proceed.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Sean Ostro. I'm appearing on behalf of FanDuel.
Representative Atkins?
Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Ostro, for being here. And again, thank you, Representative Sanders. I like the consumer protection pieces, and I think you're right. This is a light touch of items that the industry is already engaged in across the country. There's three items that are not in here that I believe the industry is already doing. And I just wanted to verify with Mr. Ostro that I'm right about that. And in fact, I've been tracking what happened in Virginia and what's been going on elsewhere and what the industry's been doing. Those three pieces are an independent audit, background checks to make sure that we don't have folks with illegal gambling backgrounds or convicted felons running these operations. And I'm not suggesting that FanDuel is doing that, by the way, but audits, registration, and background checks. Are those pieces that you guys are doing in other states and you're doing yourselves that you wouldn't object to?
Mr. Ostro.
Yes, we have a registration process in most of the states. So far, we've only had legislation passed in two states, Virginia and Indiana. In both of those, there is a registration component. As far as background checks, that is present in the Virginia bill. I don't know the specifics or if there are any in the Indiana bill. You know, the length that you want to go in background checks, I guess, would be the consideration. You know, it's not like a brick-and-mortar casino or something like that where you have employees handling money or some of the other type of industries where background checks would be customary. So, you know, to some degree, yes, we certainly believe background checks would be acceptable to a certain degree. Most of our principals and investors are, you know, large public and privately owned companies. Right. So.
So that was that covered registration, background checks, and then your the audit piece you're doing,
yes.
Mr. Ostro.
Yes, the audit is.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry,
it's still early in the session. I'm not used to. And Representative Sanders, if you'd be, I mean, as long as they're doing it elsewhere, if you wouldn't object to adding those components to this light touch consumer protection, I think that would make it much more valuable to consumers, number one, and more palatable to some folks that are concerned about these issues, as long as the industry is doing it already. Is that something you'd be representable to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Atkins, I think at this time I probably won't accept those changes.
You would or you will not?
I will not, clearly. No. Representative Atkins, I appreciate what you're saying. I appreciate where you're coming from in this. A couple things from my point. One, these companies are doing these things already. I don't think there's a need to put them in statute. I think it begins to raise a lot of questions whether or not you know, they're allowed to do their own or go out and seek third-party auditors, whether or not it's a function of government. In some of these other states, I think it was Virginia, I mean, they have a $50,000 registration fee in that bill. You know, I mean, that may be easy for FanDuel and DraftKings to pay, but that basically shuts everyone else out of the market. And then, you know, then we're left with two giant companies in daily fantasy sports, and no one else is really able to compete in the marketplace. So I think at this point in time, look, I think, you know, for about 30 years, fantasy sports have survived just fine without having to register with the government, without having to put these protections in place in law. Think the marketplace is a great decider of where they want to spend their time and money, and we haven't. I don't think there's any evidence that anyone's ever been taken advantage of in fantasy sports, or where we have any consumers in Minnesota that have had any of their consumer rights violated by seasonal or daily fantasy sports teams. So at this time, I'd like to just adopt the A2 as it is. And certainly we can continue to have the discussion as it moves through. I mean, it has quite a committee path on it. But at this time, the A2 is where I'm comfortable.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Sanders.
Thank you.
Members, other questions? We're going to go ahead and vote on the A2 amendment, and then we are certainly open to more questions and more testimony from the public. Representative Sanders is moving the A2 amendment. Those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion does prevail. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Sanders to the bill as amended. Members, any questions?
Yeah.
Is there anyone else in the audience? Mr. Grassel, do you want to come down and speak? If there's anyone else that wants to speak for or against the bill, please let us know.
You may be part of that show.
Mr. Grassel, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jake Grassel, Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, our organization opposes this bill. This bill is far more expansive than Minnesotans are being led to believe. This is not a bill legalizing your friendly fantasy sports league that's played with your neighbors, your friends, and your colleagues. If that was the case, truly, we would not be here. If this was about season-long fantasy sports, we would not be in front of you today. Rather, this is what we feel is the largest expansion of gambling the state has seen since the implementation of the lottery, if not bigger. This is not a sports bill. It's a gambling bill. It's a gambling bill that is extremely troublesome, as it will put a casino truly in the hands of every child in Minnesota with a smartphone. Let's look at some of the things that we're not looking at that this bill actually would allow outside of your normal fantasy football. Non-sports fantasy contests. This would allow for essentially the betting on award show, Dancing with the Stars. To me, that's gambling. And even more troublesome, extremely troublesome, is that this bill would allow for a new industry in the fantasy sports world called esports, which is incredibly destructive and encourages young people to wager and lose money on video games. There's currently a big contest going on video game platforms where you can wager money on simulated basketball games. So this bill would not preclude that from occurring in the state of Minnesota. Daily fantasy is not season-long fantasy. Season-long fantasy takes a great amount of skill. That starts with a draft, and players must navigate throughout the course of a season, trades, injuries, bye weeks, and make other strategic moves to set themselves up. In daily fantasy, you simply use a salary cap to select your players with what they call the sharks, utilizing computer software to optimize lineups and even pick their opponents. They're essentially placing a bet against a minnow that comes in and loses their money to them. Even the sites, the daily fantasy sites, are different. NFL.com, ESPN.com, that manage the campaign, the season-long platforms, they're free, friendly. DFS sites, they take a chunk of the money, of the money wagered. In gambling parlance, this is commonly known as the VIG or the rake. What is daily fantasy sports? It is admittedly internet sports gambling. DraftKings CEO Jason Robbins, has acknowledged such that his website is almost identical to a casino. Many others in the gambling industry, bookmakers, even the chairman of MGM Casinos calls this internet sports gambling. This bill should be rejected, as Minnesotans will lose. As many of you may have read recently, a Peggy Noonan article in the Wall Street Journal talked about what we're seeing in America in the rise of the protected versus the unprotected classes. Here, the protected class is the site operators, investors, and sharks who prey on the unprotected class. The average player who loses more than a majority of the time, largely due to the manipulation of the market by the sharks, who are able to pick their opponents in favorable matchups. I urge you to vote against this bill, as it poses an exceptionally addictive form of gambling to our nation's youth who have grown up playing video games and can now bet on the outcome of them. So I'd implore you to vote this bill down.
Thank you, Mr. Grassel. Members, any questions? Representative Sanders, do you have somebody with you that wants to speak or reply to that?
I could try to respond to that. I appreciate Mr. Grassel and the work that they normally do, but I don't know if he's completely read the bill. First of all, you have to be over 18 to play. We just all voted on that. It's on the bill. You have to be over 18 to play. In fact, if you go back and look at DraftKings and FanDuel for sure, you've had to be 18 or over. You have to have a credit card. You have to have a PayPal account. But this bill says that you have to be 18 or older to play. Fantasy sports are not gambling, and there's a few notes of distinction for that. Number one, the big two, but the daily fantasy sites, they're the arena. They're the stadium. They are where you play the game against another team. FanDuel and DraftKings and other daily fantasy sites don't win based on the outcome of any event. They don't win based on the score of a game. They don't win based on how many people are playing. And so, you know, it's not gambling. The house doesn't win. You don't have a chance to lose to the house. You're competing against other teams, other fantasy players in the arena. So it's clearly not gambling. This is the first I've heard of his testimony, but, I guess I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. Mr. Ostro, do you want to add anything to that?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I just wanted to respond to the Sharks comment that people who come on to play at our on our site are immediately thrown in with other people that are far more experienced or using things like computer software that would give them an advantage over every other player. We've banned all third-party scripts, which are the things that allow people to utilize programs and other manipulations that would give them an advantage. We've totally banned those. Anybody that is caught using them is automatically lifetime banned from our site. We also have experienced player badges, which we're implementing, in which anybody who's played over a certain number of games or has been designated as an experienced player would be addressed as such on the site and easily identified by other players. We also have beginner-only contests where people that are new to the site are encouraged to play in these beginner-only sites where experienced players cannot prey on them.
Thank you, sir. Representative Atkins?
Yeah, well, and Representative Sanders' comments prompted this. So if, let's say my kid gets hold of my credit card they go online, they start to try to participate. How do we know and how do we prevent that from happening?
Representative Sanders or Mr. Ostro, whoever wants to.
We do extensive background checks. We make sure using a number of database matches and LexisNexis, things of that nature to determine who is actually playing. If they have all of your information, credit card, address, social security, if all of that information is available to them, quite honestly, I'm not sure we could stop your son from playing it. At a certain point, parental responsibility becomes part of that equation, I believe.
Okay. Well, I brought that up because Representative Sanders said you can't play if you're under 18.
Right.
But it strikes me as it's as simple as getting a hold of a... Well, in order to play, though, I have to share my Social Security number with you?
No, that's not part of the registration requirement. But if your son were to register and he's under 18... he would have to use your name, your information. Essentially, it would be a fraudulent account.
Okay. Representative Atkins.
And then, actually, I've got a question. If there's somebody here to talk about charitable gambling and some of the comparisons, is there charitable gambling or the lottery, for that matter? Thank you, by the way, Mr. Ostro.
We got them both.
and I'll be very brief, but I'm just maybe for...
Mr. Barrett, you want to?
And as he's coming down, I'm going to share with you. My questions are going to be about what I asked Representative Sanders about adding was background checks, audits, and registration. For folks at Mr. Barrett, for folks engaged in charitable gambling activities here in Minnesota, do they undergo background checks?
Mr. Barrett.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Tom Barrett, Director of the Gambling Control Board. And yes, to the extent anybody that's touching the charitable gaming products, manufacturers that make the game, the distributors that deliver the games, the charities that sell the games, we do different levels of background. Well, we, with our counterparts at Public Safety, will do the background checks. Very thorough. We're touching on criminal. We're touching on financial. And it does lend itself to clearing out some of the apple, so to speak, when we find people that want to come into Minnesota, one of the biggest in the country for charitable gaming, and they don't pass the background. So yeah. It's definitely worth our while, part of our integrity, to do the backgrounds.
Thank you.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Like Representative Sanders said, we are the highest per capita in the country in terms of participation. How about audits? Do they undergo audits?
Mr. Baer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, absolutely. To the extent we're doing select inventory audits of the product on the shelves, but more importantly with the charities that are selling the games, does everything tie out in terms of the bank deposits, the use of the proceeds? I'd love to be able to say we're doing annual audits for those charities, staffing what they are, but roughly about a little over every 2 years. We might have some triggers that by simply the database on how they're selling the games, the percentage of the games being sold, that might quicken our audit, but we do touch those vendors, those charities that are involved in charitable gaming.
Okay. Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Barrett, they register with you guys, with the Charitable Gambling Board?
Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, absolutely. As you're probably aware, over 2,700 sites, Minnesota, 1,200 charitable organizations, 11 manufacturers, 18 distributors, all licensed.
And final question, those that are operating here in Minnesota, Ms. Barrett, they're based here in Minnesota. They're operating in Minnesota. They're not operating remotely from New York or Massachusetts or California or somewhere else, correct?
Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, a little clarification. We do have a couple of manufacturers that will manufacture a paper pull tab game that's not in Minnesota, but they're required to have a warehouse site along with the distributors all within Minnesota. The electronic games are all required to have a central-based server in Minnesota, so we can knock on those doors and verify the inventory and everything. All the records are correct and physically there.
Thank you, Ms. Barrett.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Thank you, Mr. Baer. Members, any other questions?
Mr. I don't see any need to call down the lottery, but I think we've all been on this committee long enough that we know they do background checks, they do registration, they do audits. So I think I've made my point more than adequately.
I was thinking the same thing, and I think Mr. Kwapik probably agrees.
I'll bet he does.
Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Any other member questions? With that, Representative Sanders, we'll give you the last brief word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will ask for member support and renew my motion that House File 2540 be referred to public safety.
Representative Sanders renews his motion that House File 2540 as amended be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Sanders. Thank you, members, for a good discussion. With that, last bill of the day, Representative Kreisha. Representative Kreisha moves that House File 3129 be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for clarification, I'm going to Education Finance, not GovOps?
That is correct.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
Thank you. And I do have A1 author's amendment.
Okay. And Representative Kreisha, just for clarity, I don't know, but I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that after Ed Finance, it will have to go to government operations. I assume that the A1 amendment is an author's amendment?
That is correct.
Those in favor of the adoption of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. The bill is now in the shape the author would like it to be in. Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. What you have in front of you is a realignment of what was called the Health Insurance Transparency Act that was passed a couple years ago. What we are trying to do with this is just right the ship a little bit. We've gone through a process of wanting to make sure that when school districts negotiate bids with their teachers for health insurance, that they work together and that it's not an unfair playing field. And what this bill does is three things very simply. All it does is it requires, it takes out a statute that there's any requirement on which bid you have to seek from. So when you go out to get your bids, you get it from at least three sources. That can be any of the providers. It could be from the PEAT plan, the Public Employee Insurance Plan. The second thing that it does is it moves the bidding process to a possibility of 4 years instead of a mandated 2 years right now. Because many school districts enter into a contract that is going to work out just fine, and by making them go into a two-year cycle, it raises costs and it really puts an undue burden on those. And if you're in a PEEP school district, there is no requirement there. If you're self-insured, you don't have to do anything. So what we're just trying to do is say to all the schools, let's be fair to this whole process. And the third thing that we want to do I want to make sure I have this here, is there's no unilateral agreement. Neither the teachers union nor the administration can make the decision. They need to make it together. We're not allowing one side or the other to force the hand. We're asking them to work together. So that's what the bill in front of you does. I have a couple testifiers, one of which is Earl Ottman, who is the school administrator at the Pierce School District. And I'm going to let him talk briefly on this, well, or as long as he likes, because quite honestly, he's very, very knowledgeable in this.
Mr. Ottman, welcome to the committee. Please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, representatives. My name is Earl Ottman. I am representing the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, MASBOL. I've been working in school finance for 37 years and have been a member of NJPA's Health Insurance Executive Committee for nearly 30. Our first area of concern is that mainly smaller rural school districts and their cooperatives must seek a bid from PEEP. During the last bid cycle, NJPA did that, sought a bid for its membership, and about 30 minutes after receiving our claims data, PEEP informed us that they were going to decline to provide a bid. NJPA continued with the formal bid process and after much analysis awarded the bid to its current third-party administrator. This process did very little, if anything, to lower premium costs, but it did raise administrative costs in the form of additional meetings by district staffs, travel, and consultant expenses. This was not the end of it, as many districts received letters from Education Minnesota demanding that they go out and get a bid from PEEP. Some did and had additional administrative expenses to pay for analyzing those bids. MASBOL proposes that districts shouldn't have to seek a bid from PEEP, that PEEP should respond solely based on whether it is in their best interest to do so, just like other insurers do. However, if a district does decide that they want a quote from PEEP, PEEP should be required to provide one in a timely manner so that districts can comply with the other mandates of the law. MASBOL's second proposed amendment to the HIDTA law is to change the requirement that districts have to go out for bid every 2 years unless the exclusive representative agrees to a longer term. Prior to the HIDTA law, districts could go out every year if they chose. Some did. But they had to go out at least once every 5 years if fully insured, or once every 4 years if self-insured with a service co-op. The previous law obviously allowed for greater flexibility for districts and their staffs than current law. To date, I am unaware of Education Minnesota recommending their members accept any term greater than 2 years. This makes current law of allowing a longer term moot for most districts. MASBOL proposes that the previous law for the bid cycle be reinstated. Here's why. Not only do districts administratively to employees and insurance providers as well, believe it or not, teachers do not like the change for the sake of change. Training and retraining employees and administrators resulting from switching coverages causes frustrations for everyone. Every insurance company and most third-party administrators also offer ancillary programs such as prevention, wellness, and disease management designed to improve individual health outcomes and reduce overall claims. If these programs are disrupted and replaced every 2 years, they are less likely to foster long-term engagement and participation among employees. It also makes it difficult to measure the efficacy and return on investment in such programs, making them appear less important to maintain. Properly managed group health plans make long-term investments on improving health and preventing disease. Doing these things will do more than going out for bid every 2 years. Group health plans require a high level of human interaction and service, especially in the light of the complexities imposed on employers by the Affordable Care Act. This requires relationship building and trust between the service providers and the school district personnel. If these relationships are severed every 2 years or subject to a blackout during the RFP process, the ability to consult, educate, and serve the district is degraded. And from an administrative perspective, due to the complexity of this process, it is often necessary for districts to hire actuaries and attorneys to evaluate these RFPs, responses, and negotiate contracts. Secondly, insurance companies don't like uncertainty and will manage their book of business accordingly. This means rates will more likely be higher from the start of a two-year contract. And thirdly, insurance companies and their underwriters are inclined to be more conservative when bidding, knowing that they only have a two-year window to recover potential losses. Our third proposed change is, after going through the HITA process from solicitation of bids to final award, the exclusive representative of the largest bargaining unit, in most cases this is the teachers union, can literally obtain a PEAT bid and leave the district's insurance plan regardless if the PEAT plan meets or exceeds current benefit packages or whether it's more expensive or not. This undermines the whole HITA law. This leaves other district employees a choice of staying with the district's plan or joining PEAT. Districts such as Edina, Upsala, Wadena, Alexandria have experienced this split. Administering split groups is a headache, if not worse, and can negatively impact the aggregate value of benefits for the remaining personnel. This particular law causes turmoil in the districts when the largest bargaining group decides to make a change on their own. Forcing districts to go out for bid, as stated earlier, has shown that it has very little merit. Allowing districts to decide what is best for them will have more. Lastly, MASL members are confused about one part of the HITA law, and we'd like some clarification. Some MASL members are under the assumption that they are with PEAP, they do not have to go out for bid every 2 years. If these members are correct, then this provides PEAP an unfair advantage over their competition that must follow the law by not having to incur these expenses associated with going out for bid. We would like clarification on this assumption should the requirement to go out for bid every 2 years stands. In summary, our proposals will only help the HITA law be more fair and more accountable to the districts and the staffs we serve.
Thank you, Mr. Othman. Members, any questions? Seeing none. Mr. Othman, if you want to stay there, we got a couple more people signed up to testify, and then there might be others, but we might be calling on you to answer some questions here in a minute. Julie Sonier, and I apologize if I mispronounced that name. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify on this bill. My name is Julie Sonier, and I'm the director of the Employee Insurance Division at Minnesota Management and Budget. In this capacity, I oversee both PEAP and the State Employee Group Insurance Program. As you know, PEAP is a statewide health, dental, and life insurance pool that's managed by the Employee Insurance Division. Local units of government, including counties, cities, townships, school districts, and other jurisdictions are eligible to participate in PEAP. My testimony today focuses on the continued ability of school districts to voluntarily seek price quotes from PEAP if they choose to do so. As it's currently written, line 1-4 of the bill would restrict school districts from being able to participate in PEAP by making them ineligible to participate in the program and thus ineligible to seek a quote if they would choose to do so. So our concern is that effectively the provision prevents any school district that's not currently in PEAP from ever joining the program, and we're not sure that from a policy perspective that serves a useful purpose if there is a school district out there that would choose to voluntarily seek a quote from the program. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions? We do have one more person on the list. Mark Schmeising? Schmeising?
Pronounce Mark
I'm German. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mark Schmeising, and I represent Education Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one of the major concerns that we continually hear from our members is how the cost of their health care is extremely high. The cost of health insurance is continually rising with greater share of premium going to employees. At the same time, plan design is shifting to higher deductibles, copays, and out-of-pocket maximums. This also shifts a greater burden to the employee. We must address these trends so educators have affordable, quality, sustainable health care. HITA, the Health Insurance Transparency Accountability Act, provides some guidelines on how school districts can request bids and negotiate over health insurance. One of the major parts of the HITA legislation was to require multiple insurance bids to increase the competition among healthcare entities. The HITA legislation also required that one of those bids be from an administrator governed by 43A or PEEP, the Public Employees Insurance Group. The requirement to get a PEEP bid has placed at least one bid in front of districts to provide, if nothing else, a barometer and a comparative tool. This improves the competitive nature of the bidding process and ensures at least one bid the district may or may not have sought on their own. The Public Employees Insurance Program was created by special legislation to make a comprehensive package of medical, dental, and life insurance benefits available to employees of Minnesota cities, townships, counties, and school districts, and other units of government. PEEP was designed exclusively to give public employees comprehensive coverage they deserve while giving public employees access to high-quality benefit packages that will attract and return outstanding employees. Have school districts, prior to the HITA legislation, taken advantage of at least examining this option? This option that was created by the legislature to give public employees the comprehensive coverage they deserve to attract and retain outstanding employees? The answer is no. Prior to HITA legislation, in 2009, 101 school districts requested a PEEP bid. 76 of those requests were initiated by the local. In 2010, 5 schools requested a PEEP bid. 2011, 247 schools requested a PEEP bid. 195 of those requests were initiated by a bargaining group. And in 2012, 9 schools requested a PEEP bid. Since September of 2014, 316 quotes have been given to school districts by PEEP. In that time, 21 groups have joined the public employees insurance pool and 7 have left. To comply with the RFP process, a number of districts have had from a service provider through a service co-op a bid on the same plans from the service provider without the service co-op and one from the service provider themselves. And PEEP was the third bid. PEEP provided the only real bid from a competitive perspective. These new standards have only been in place for a year, but we have already heard many examples from around the state of how they are helping teachers and their families receive better, less expensive health care. As stated, 21 groups have joined PEEP to gain better rates, better coverage, or better renewal stability. But this is only part of the story. By knowing that districts are going to get a PEEP bid, all other providers need to be aware of that competition. House File 3129 would extend contracts from 2 years to 5 years for groups insurance not provided by co-ops and 4 by those in co-ops. This locks members and districts into a non-competitive situation for renewals for a longer period of time. I would also point out that this could happen right now. All it takes is an agreement between the exclusive representative and the largest bargaining unit. The district and the largest bargaining unit. House File 3129 would eliminate the unilateral right of a bargaining unit to accept the PEEP bid as outlined in 43A.316 Subdivision 5. This is the only real tool that locals have if they disagree with the district on the group insurance choices. Bargaining units represent the ultimate consumers of the health insurance product. They should have an active voice in this selection process. Others may argue that a bargaining unit choosing PEEP provides a division between the bargaining unit and other employees. It needs to be clearly understood that a PEEP bid is for the entire district. It is strongly encouraged that the entire district move to PEEP if a bargaining unit makes that decision. The PEEP legislation, however, does not prevent other parts of the district from exercising their right to choose the carrier of their choice. In closing, I would like to make it clear that Education Minnesota strongly opposes the changes offered by House File 3129.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to clarify something that the testifier just said. I believe that he said that because this allows a longer period of time for the contracts to go on, that the school districts would be tied into a contract for a lengthier period of time. And I think this legislation says that it just must not be longer than 4 years. I don't think that eliminates their ability to get quotes every year if they want to. Is that, am I right to the author of the bill?
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that is correct. And the other question I would have, and I'll ask it through the chair, is clarification as my testifier said it. If you're on a PEAT contract, and maybe Education Minnesota can help, are they required to go out for bids every 2 years as well? I don't know who can answer that.
Ms. Soner, do you want to? Thank you. If I sit here and look vague long enough, usually somebody will come to my rescue. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my understanding is that school employers that are participating in PEEP are not required to go out for bid every 2 years. That particular bit of statute is in Chapter 43A.316, which is PEEP's authorizing statute. It's subdivision 10.
Could you be more precise? I'm just kidding.
If you have your answer.
Representative Crescia.
Yeah, I was just going to, I mean, on one hand, I have the argument that we should not be allowed to go out, but on the other hand, if you get into this program, you waive that. So that's what we have in front of you, members.
Representative Lunan. Thank you, Ms. Soner. You might want to stay here with Mr. Rothman, and everybody stay up there. We may have more questions here.
If I could. I'm sorry.
Representative Crescia.
I do want to touch on something that, what was the last name? Ms. Sonier said, and I'm wondering if House Speech can help me, because it was not my intention that she said in 313 or 314 that any school would be ineligible from PEEP. That was not the intention. If that was inadvertently put in, I would fix that between committees. And if House Research could clarify, if that's how that was written, I would make sure, and you'd have my word, committee members, that would be fixed between committees.
Representative Crescia, I was going to bring that up, and we need to make sure that that gets clarified. It's going to Education Finance, and we can, I mean, we all trust you and think it'll get fixed, but I mean, you need to fix it or the bill will be in big trouble. So, Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. One for the testifier, Ms. Sawyer. The
sure.
In the PEEP program, what is their loss ratio? Do you deal with that,
Ms. Sonier?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lunan, so you're talking about the percentage of premiums that are spent for medical claims plus administrative costs?
Right, because then I have another question for the other testifier relative to that.
It's very high. It's above 95%.
And then
thank
to the
you,
other
Representative Lunan.
Thank you. To the other testifier, you went through the numbers really quick, but just kind of eyeballing it, when you said that including a PEEP bid creates competition, yet the number wasn't even 15% of the bids that prevailed.
Representative Luna, I assume that question was for Mr. Schmiesing?
Correct.
Mr. Schmiesing.
And that number, I mean, if there's three people bidding, the number should be up in the mid-30%.
Yeah, and as there were 316 quotes since September 1 of 2014 to school districts given by PEEP. Okay, of those bids, 21 groups joined PEEP, and in that same period of time, 7 groups left PEEP. Okay, so there is a greater migration towards the public employees insurance pool than away from the public employees insurance pool. Now, again, as has been pointed out, change is difficult, and this is a plan that takes some knowledge and some education in order for people to understand. So it's a slow trend.
Representative Lunan?
Their closing ratio, I'll call it, as an insurance guy, is actually very, very low. So I'm assuming that in most of the cases, the bids aren't competitive. That's what the decision would be based on. I want to speak to the longer term of contracts. Insurance companies do always attempt to mitigate risk, and an offer of a longer contract, I guess this would be for the school administrator, a school district would go forward with that only if there was a favorable bid or a difference in the 4-year bid versus the 2-year bid. That would be the only benefit of accepting that longer bid. Would that be correct?
Mr. Rothman?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lund, yes, I believe that would be the way.
So just another option is what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Rothman. Members, any other questions? Anybody else that wants to come down and speak for or against the bill? Larry, do you want to weigh in on the 3.13, 3.14? Ms. Pompeo?
Chair and Representative, 3.13 and 3.14 does prohibit new entries into PEEP because the school district is no longer considered an eligible employer, which is an entry point for PEEP. We could do an oral amendment to strike those lines at this time.
Representative Grisha?
Mr. Chair, I will do, here's what I'd rather do. I mean, we could do an oral amendment, but you have my word. Representative Markford is my number two on this. I am seeking bipartisan. I want to make this fair, and I want to do the legislation right. I have Senator Stump carrying this in the House. I mean, we have broad support. And I know the chair of the Education Finance very well, and I would imagine she wouldn't let me even have this introduced unless I fixed it. If you would pass me forward and let me go to Ed Finance, I will work to make sure this language is cleaned up between committees.
Representative Atkins?
I think that's
fair. Thank you, Representative Atkins. And Representative Crescia, we know that you're going to get this straightened out. We'll keep an eye on it. If it doesn't get straightened out, I think we need to bring it back to Commerce. And I know that's nobody wants to do it. It's not your intention.
Agreed.
Mr. Hoffman, did you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other thing is, just so that we're clear, MASBA only wants this to be built to be improved, make it more workable, and more fair for all concerned.
Okay. Mr. Hoffman, I think that, thank you for the clarification. I think everybody knows that about you and both you and Representative Crescia and everybody that testified. So thank you all for making it, making it a better bill and keeping it a work in progress. Representative Crescia will give you the final word.
Just my final word. I do realize this bill. I know all the ins and outs and ramifications of it. And as a commitment to this committee, when I get that language, I will make sure everybody in this committee has a copy of that. And I welcome anybody that wants to come to me with any improvements. Like I said, Representative Markort and I have been trying very hard to make sure we do this right, and I want to continue that going forward.
Thank you, Representative Crescia. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In spite of Representative Crescia having the final word, maybe you could cough at the end after I get said. I just wanted to make certain nobody on this side had spoken yet, Mr. Chairman. We do have, I think I, on behalf of all of us, we have very serious concerns about the bill. If it was anybody, but I mean, if this was David's carrying the bill, we'd keep it right here and we just keep it. But I think all of us, Representative, have a great deal of regard for you. We hope that you're able to work that out. If it doesn't work out, Mr. Chairman, we've got your assurance that it'll work its way back here and we'll talk about it some more. But I wish you the best in trying to figure it out. But I think it'd be a hard one for many on our side to eventually come to support. So,
understood.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Well said. With that, Representative Crescia renews his motion that House File 3129, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Those in favor of this motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion. Motion prevails. You can't vote both ways, Representative Davids. Motion prevails. Members, thank you for everything. Representative Crescia, good job. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, we've been down here in this hearing room a couple times now, and I just want to bring up my annual complaint about we are the Commerce Committee after all, and it'd be kind of neat if we could actually get modern technology down here that actually works. And I've kind of checked around with a few members, so it isn't just AT&T that is epically failing me as a customer. Apparently Sprint is, and other companies too. So I don't know, as Mr. Chair, if you could summon some of these companies down here, but it's unfortunate that we have to kind of be in a void down here with the technology.
Representative Lilly, just get your hammer and chisel and your stone tablet and quit complaining. We will bring that up, and I think when that is coming in the near future, I'll leave it at that. That's my best guess. But members, thank you, and with that, we are adjourned.